Part 2. Imitative Magic and the Magical Link. Superstitions are instinctive, and all that is instinctive is founded in the very nature of things, to which fact the skeptics of all times have given insufficient attention. Eliphas Levi, The Doctrine and Ritual of Magic. Magic depends heavily on mimicry. Campanella and Urban VIII constructed an imitation sky in their sealed room. The magician tortures or kills an animal in a ceremony of hatred as an imitation of the action of the force he is trying to arouse. When a magician musters the full power of his will and acts in a certain way, he believes that he causes the force of the universe outside him to act in the same way. This is an extension of the rule of as below, so above. As the magician behaves below, so will the forces of the universe behave above. Knots are very sinister things, much used by witches, because to tie a knot is magically to tie and impede the person who is the target of the spell. An example is the terrible death talisman of the string with 9 knots, sometimes called the witch's ladder. The string is tied with a fierce concentration of hatred against an enemy and hidden somewhere close to him. The knots slowly throttle the life out of him, and he dies. The only cure is to find the string in time and untie the knots. Witches sometimes tied knots to stop cows from giving milk, but their main use in witchcraft was to prevent a couple from enjoying the pleasures of the bed. Jean Bodin, the political philosopher, who was also an authority on witchcraft, was told by a witch at Poitiers in 1567 that there were more than 50 ways of tying a knot for this purpose. The knot could impede the man alone, or the woman alone, for a day, or a year, or a lifetime. It could make one love the other, but be hated in return, or it could make the pair tear each other with their nails in lovemaking. Different types of knot would prevent intercourse, or procreation, or urination. In the second idyll of Theocritus, written about 275 B.C., the witch Simaetha tries to draw her faithless lover Delphis back to her by another type of imitative magic. She lights a fire and throws grain onto it, saying that the grain represents her lover's bones. She burns bay leaves. Delphis racks me. I burn him in these bays. So waste his flesh to powder in the fire. She heats wax over the fire, chanting that as it melts, so may Delphis be melted with love. She has stolen part of his robe, and she shreds it and drops it on the flames. She believes that as the ingredients of the charm burn in the fire, so Delphis will burn with love for her. In a similar scene in Virgil's 8th eclogue, the witch twines threads around a small figure of her lover, made of clay and wax, to entwine him in her love. Mimicry alone is not enough. Imitating the action of a force arouses it to act in the way which is imitated. But to direct it at a particular victim, there must be a link between the spell and the victim, otherwise the force will not hit the intended target. The link may be created simply by words, by saying that the grain is the victim's bones and the bay leaves his flesh, or by making a doll which is a miniature replica of him, or by working on a part of his body, or his clothes, or something which has been closely connected with him. A grim Scottish method of finding out whether someone who is ill will recover or not establishes a magical link by the force of words alone. Dig 2 holes in the ground. Call one the living grave and the other the dead grave. Fetch the sick man and put him on the ground between the holes without telling him which is which. If he turns his face to the living grave, he will recover. If to the dead grave, he will die. The sensations of the sick man who believes in this test can be imagined. It may have worked efficiently in many cases because of the psychological effect on the patient who discovered that he was bound to get well or doomed to die. Once the link has been made, the effects of the spell follow the principle of imitative magic, the law of like to like. In 1597, Isabel Ritchie of Aberdeen was accused of murdering Thomas Forbes. She took 2 pillows to his house and weighed them against each other, and then, in the words of the accusation, quote, "In thy enchanting manner appointed the one pillow to be the said Thomas, and the other Elspeth Forbes, his daughter, and because the said Thomas his pillow was the lightest, by thy witchcraft he died, unquote. The heavier pillow stood for the plumpness of life and health, the lighter for the shrunkenness of starvation and death. The force of words said in an enchanting manner created a link between Thomas Forbes and the lighter pillow, and so he died. Physical contact or nearness also establishes a link. A singularly unpleasant cure for a child's whooping cough is to tie a nest of mice round the child's neck in a bag. This links the mice with the cough in the child's throat, and as the mice starve to death in the bag, the cough will gradually disappear. Writing in 1944, Christina Hole said that in the last 5 years in Cheshire, she had known women who rubbed their children's warts with a snail and impaled the snail on a thorn, convinced that as it lingeringly died, the warts would dwindle away to nothing. In December 1962, a woman was arrested in a suburb of San Francisco and accused of charging $70 to cure stomach pains by rolling an egg to and fro on the sufferer's stomach and then smashing the egg on the floor. Another kind of link is provided by the magical law that anything which has once been part of a man's body or in close contact with him retains its connection with his body even after it has been physically separated from him. This is the basis of the well-known primitive fear of allowing your cut hair or nails to fall into anyone else's hands because they can be used against you. They are still magically linked with your body, and whatever is done to them will affect you. In a famous case at York, Pennsylvania, 1929, John H. Bleymeyer was sentenced to life imprisonment for the murder of Nelson Raymeyer. Raymeyer, who was notorious in the area as a black magician, was killed in a struggle to get a lock of his hair, which was to be buried as part of a charm against him. Aleister Crowley, who had much to fear from certain rival magicians, was always careful to see that no one could get hold of his hair, nail clippings, excreta, or other bodily products. The best-known type of imitative magic relies on creating a link with its victim by making an image of him in wax, clay, rags, or whatever material is to hand, usually including his hair or nail clippings, blood or sweat, which retain their connection with him. The image is pierced with a nail or a needle, broken in pieces, twisted and tortured, burned or sunk in water, and because it is a replica of the victim, linked to him through its appearance and the products of his body, whatever is done to it is done to him. Image magic has been practiced in every part of the world and in all periods of history. In some prehistoric cave paintings, animals are shown pierced with arrows, probably as a magical aid to hunting them. A recent example is the discovery in February 1964 of the figure of a naked woman, 6 inches long and made of modeling clay, near Sandringham in Norfolk. It was stuck through the heart with a sharp sliver of hawthorn, and near it were a black candle and a sheep's heart. This figure may have been meant either to kill or to seduce. Piercing the image's heart can be intended to pierce the victim's breast with love. A 15th century book written in a mixture of Hebrew and Yiddish says that to seduce a girl, you should make a female figure of wax with the sex organs clearly shown. The face should be as good a likeness as possible. Across the breast of the figure, write her name. Blank, daughter of blank, father's name, and daughter of blank, mother's name. Write the same thing on the back between the shoulders. Then say over it, May it be thy will, O Lord, that N, daughter of N, burn with a mighty passion for me. Bury the figure carefully so that its limbs are not broken, and leave it for 24 hours, probably near the girl's house or a path which she often takes, to create a link with her by physical nearness, but the charm does not say this. Dig the figure up again, and wash it 3 times in water, doing this once in the name of the Archangel Michael, once in the name of Gabriel, once in the name of Raphael. Then dip it in urine, presumably your own, to create a link between the girl and you, and afterwards dry it. When you want to arouse passion in the girl, pierce the figure's heart with a brand new needle. This entire charm appears in the book, written backwards. In 1329, Pierre Recordi, a Carmelite friar, was sentenced to imprisonment for life for invoking demons and making wax images to win the love of women. He molded the wax with his own blood and spittle, magically mingling his own body with the woman's body represented by the image. Then he buried the image under the woman's threshold. He said he had seduced 3 women in this way and had given thanks to Satan with sacrifices afterwards. In January 1960, while the office building of the Hereford Rural District Council was being repaired, a small figure of a woman was found in the cellar. Tucked into its skirt was a piece of paper, worn and dirty with age, on which was written the name Mary Ann Wand, and the words, quote, "I act this spell upon you from my whole heart, wishing you to never rest nor eat nor sleep the restern part of your life. I hope your flesh will waste away, and I hope you will never spend another penny I ought to have. Wishing this from my whole heart," unquote. Almost 3 centuries before, at Salem in 1692, images were found in another cellar with much more serious consequences. According to Cotton Mather's account of the trial of Bridget Bishop in his Wonders of the Invisible World, John Bly and William Bly gave evidence that when they knocked down the cellar wall of the old house she used to live in, quote, "they did in the holes of the said old wall find several poppets made up of rags and hog's bristles with headless pins in them, the points being outward, whereof she could give no account unto the court that was reasonable or tolerable," unquote. There were several other charges of witchcraft against Bridget Bishop. She was hanged from the branches of an oak tree 8 days later. In 1560, a wax image of Queen Elizabeth I, with a pin jabbed through its breast, was found in Lincoln's Inn Fields, to the horror of the court. The witches of North Berwick tried to kill James VI of Scotland, afterwards James I of England, with a wax image. Agnes Sampson and 9 others met near Prestonpans, the devil, their master, being with them. The image, wrapped in a linen cloth, was shown to the devil. After he had approved it, the image was passed from hand to hand, all saying, quote, "This is King James VI, ordained to be consumed at the instance of a nobleman, Francis Earl Bothwell," unquote. The image was to be roasted to kill the king. Many writers have suggested that the devil, in this case, was the Earl of Bothwell himself. Here, as in many other cases, the link between the victim and the image is strengthened by formally giving the image the victim's name. Quote, "This is King James VI," unquote. In 1315, Hugh Gerot, Bishop of Cahors, and 2 other bishops who were fanatical enemies of Pope John XXII, were accused of plotting the Pope's death by poison and sorcery. They first tested the efficiency of their magic by killing the Pope's favorite nephew with a wax image, and then went on to the main task. 3 wax images were baptized in full form with the names of the Pope and 2 leading members of his court. They were hidden in loaves of bread and sent to the papal court at Avignon. The messengers were searched at the gates of Avignon. The loaves and images were found in their baggage with a whole battery of sorcerer's equipment, poisons and herbs, arsenic, quicksilver, rat's tails, spiders, toads and lizards, marjoram, mint, vervain, and the hair of a criminal who had been hanged. Hugh Gerot was found guilty, flayed alive, and burned in 1317. The American journalist William Seabrook came across 2 cases of image magic near Saint-Rémy in southern France in 1932. A friend of his fell on a tangled path down a hillside and lost the use of his legs, although there was nothing physically the matter with him. Seabrook discovered that his friend had been bewitched, went to the witch's house, and found in the cellar a jumbled mass of thorns and brambles, in which was a doll with a china head. It wore a man's costume, and its eyes were covered with a black cloth. Its legs and feet were tangled in a crisscross network of thorns. Quote, "It slumped, sagging there at an ugly angle, neither upright nor fallen, grotesquely sinister, like the body of a soldier caught in barbed wire," unquote. An altar stood against one wall of the cellar, and above it was written INRI, with the letters distorted into obscene shapes. Above this, again, was a pair of horns. INRI was written above the head of Jesus at the crucifixion, the letters standing for Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. The horns belonged to the great goat of the witch's Sabbath. Horns and all forked or two-pointed objects are symbols of the devil. They deny the one, which is God, and assert the two, God and the enemy. In the other case, Seabrook found an image which was intended to do murder. The doll was stuck through with pins and smeared with toad's blood. Toads have long been popularly believed to be poisonous. Near it was a Bible, and on the Bible, an inverted crucifix from which hung a toad crucified head downwards. If the image is accidentally damaged, the victim is not harmed. The image created the necessary link with the victim, but what injures him is the fierce current of deliberate hatred for which the image provides a focusing point. The torture of the image is often accompanied by rites designed to work the magician's malicious fury up to a pitch of frenzy. Appeals to the devil and acts of sacrilege, the obscene distortion of INRI, the toad crucified upside down, the burning of materials like henbane or black hellebore, which give off intoxicating fumes, slaughtering an animal near the image or drenching it with poison. The powerful psychological kick which the magician derives from these rites strengthens the waves of destructive violence which he projects at the image. In this way, he attempts to charge the image with a malevolent force which will obsess the victim's mind and destroy him. All these rites, a modern occultist explains, can play their part in causing an image, especially one already associated with destruction, to spring into a black, abounding vitality which can burn itself into the conscious and subconscious, especially during sleep.